Uchitam Mahatam Marudvit Sevanurakta Manasam Abhava Api Falguhu Yojushya Janshiti Sutta Svajanartha Dharan. Pratyam Sriyam Suravarai Sarayavalokam.
Pratyam Sriyam Suravarai Sarayavalokam.
Naishchan Ripas Taruchitam Mahatam Marudvit.
Naishchan Ripas Taruchitam Mahatam Marudvit.
Sevanurakta Manasam Abhavo Pifalgu.
Sevanurakta Manasam.
Yojushya jan shiti suta svajanartha dharan.
Yojushya jan shiti suta svajanartha dharan.
Pradyam shriyam suravarai sarayavalokam.
Pradyam shriyam suravarai sarayavalokam.
Naishchan ripas taruchitam mahatam madutvit. Sevanurakta manasam abhava pifalgu.
Sevanurakta manasam abhava pifalgu.
Yeah.
yah
hu
dushyajan.
Very difficult to give up.
Chiti,
the earth.
Suta,
children.
Svajana
artha daran,
relatives, riches,
and a beautiful wife.
Shriyam,
the goddess of fortune.
Suravarai,
by the best of the demigods.
Sadaya
avalokam,
whose merciful glance.
Na,
not.
Aichat,
desired.
Naripaha,
the king.
Taruchitam,
this is quite befitting him.
Mahatam,
of great personalities.
Mahatmas.
Madhudvit,
of Lord Krishna,
who killed the demon of Madhu.
Seva Anurakta,
attracted by the loving service.
Manasam,
of those whose minds.
Abhava
Api,
even the position of liberation.
Falgu,
insignificant.
Translation.
Sukadeva Goswami continued,
my dear king,
the activities of Bharat Maharaj are wonderful.
He gave up everything difficult for others to give up.
He gave up his kingdom, his wife, and his family.
His opulence was so great that even the demigods envied it,
yet he gave it up.
It was quite befitting a great personality like him to be a great devotee.
He could not renounce everything.
Oh, he could renounce everything because he was so attracted to the beauty, opulence, reputation, knowledge, strength, and renunciation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead.
Krishna is so attractive that one can give up all desirable things for his sake.
Indeed, even liberation is considered insignificant for those whose minds are attracted to the loving service of the Lord.
Purport.
This verse confirms Krishna's all-attractiveness. Bharat Maharaj was so attracted to Krishna that he gave up all his material possessions.
Generally, materialistic people are attracted by such possessions.
Ato griha kshetra sutapta viter janasya maho yam aham mameti. Bhagavatam 5.5.8.
One becomes attracted to his body, home, property, children, relatives, and wealth.
In this way, one increases life's illusions and thinks in terms of I and mine.
The attraction for material things is certainly due to illusion.
There's no value in attraction to material things, for the conditioned soul is diverted by them.
One's life is successful if he is absorbed in the attraction of Krishna's strength,
beauty, and pastimes, as described in the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam.
The Mayavadis are attracted to merging into the existence of the Lord.
But Krishna is more attractive than the desire to merge.
The word abhava means not to take birth again in this material world.
A devotee doesn't care whether he is going to be reborn or not.
He is simply satisfied with the Lord's service in any condition. That is real mukti.
Iha yasya hare dasye karmana manasa gira nikilashvapya avastasu jivan mukta sauchate.
One who acts to serve Krishna with his body, mind, and intelligence and words is a liberated person, even within this material world.
Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu 1.2.187.
A person who always desires to serve Krishna is interested in ways to convince people that there is a Supreme Personality of Godhead and that the Supreme Personality of Godhead is Krishna. That is his ambition. It doesn't matter whether he is in heaven or hell. This is called Uttama Shloka Lalasa.
So we have this
position here of attraction. So that's how the world functions, is by attraction. It means everything functions on this principle. It means that, like, this room that we're in, how is it like that? It's made up of a variety of elements, but you see that the earth elements are attracted to each other, therefore they can be put into a pillar. If they're not attracted, they'd be all separate. You can't do anything with them. Right? We just take it for granted, naturally, I can put things together. But why are they attracted? You have earth, right? It's just got everything homogeneous in it, all the minerals and vitamins and whatever it is that, you know, plants and that work with. Now, you make a plant, you put plant a seed, and then certain elements are attracted together and become a plant and become a fruit. Does it make sense? And then we're attracted by that fruit. Right? Then we're able to eat that fruit. Then we're able to assimilate it. That means what it is of value within that is attracted within the body to a particular position within the body. Right? Particular vitamins and minerals go to different parts of the body because they're attracted there. Does this make sense? So the whole world is functioning on attraction, therefore the word Krishna. He's the all-attractive. So how is it that this attraction works? Because you have all these elements, earth, water, fire, air, and ether. Why are they put together the way they are? That's because Krishna has entered it. His entering is what creates them to being able to attract it together, that you see forms, and then how one form is attracted to another. So it's his attraction, right? Something that's not attracted together won't have any attractiveness in it, therefore there's nothing to be attracted to. So the reason we are attracted to things is because Krishna's potency of attraction is in it. Otherwise it won't hold together. Just like, let's say, we take our own, you know, our own endeavor, our own potency. We build something, right? What's the next thing it does? Right? It falls apart. Right? Everything falls apart. Why does it fall apart? Because Krishna's attraction is leaving it. Does it make sense? But other things that stay together, then, you know, whatever is there, whatever is being done because it's supposed to be done, then that attraction stays longer. What you're doing that's not supposed to be done, its attraction is shorter. Right? So, yeah. So the principle. Let's see. Go back. So now we see is that he's pointed out a difference here, right? We're trying to get to this point. The whole chapter is about basically making this statement, or this kind of statement, that Bharat Maharaj is attracted to the Lord,
right?
Because it's his attractiveness and everything, so that means he's the attractive one, not the material energy. So not what he calls his kingdom, or his family, his wealth, his position. Those are only attractive because Krishna's in it. Right? So now, from this we see that, yeah, so the devotee, then they're interested in Krishna. That's the point. Is the devotee is only attracted by Krishna. So that affection makes it function, makes it work very nicely, very smoothly. So it's not actually a difficulty. We're looking at the earlier stages, the stages we're working with, and we'll say this is very difficult. Right? So he's saying here, up to the demigods, this is difficult. Why? Because the attraction is to the forms of this world, the material forms of this world, material position, material opulences. We're not attracted by the attractive element in these opulences, which is Krishna. If you're attracted by Krishna, then everything reminds you of Krishna. It's not difficult to give up because you don't see it as yours in the first place. You just see it as Krishna's. So you don't have a difficulty working with it. This is the secret here. everything goes into this, you know, more unpleasant explanations, you know, this chapter is the forest of enjoyment. Because one is working on the material attraction, right? How does a pious person function? Let's say the pious person has a plan to get married. Okay, what do they do? Right? They get themselves educated, it means trained as a person. They get themselves educated in an occupation. They establish themselves, they have facility, then they get married. Why? Because marriage is about a furtherance of performance of prescribed duties. Right? So if one sees it as I'm doing, being married is an element of prescribed duties, then you prepare for it. Right? Just like, let's say, someone who takes cooking seriously. They like to cook. They know the science. Do they prepare? Right? Do they make plans? Do they think, okay, we'll cook this, and then they need that, and what do we have in the kitchen? What do we have to acquire? You know, and like that, then they make a plan, and they come out with a very excellent meal. Now, the person who hates cooking, do they plan? No. They just, because of necessity, they're starving, they go into the kitchen, look around, what's going to be the easiest thing to get together with the least trouble, and, you know, and you won't kill yourself, right? You know, I mean, taking off the top of the bottle of bleach would be pretty quick, but it may not work out, you know, may not be a long-term menu you'd want to work with, right? So they find just what's just going to get by, right? Hence the microwave oven, right? So therefore, these things, the materialist, he only deals with it as he has the need. Why we're bringing this up? Because what's been described in the forest of material enjoyment, the person is attracted by sex life, right? Then engaging in sex life, then he worries about maintaining it by having facility. Does that make sense? So what's being described here is just mundane. And why does it bother us so much? Because it's describing our culture. Right? That's the problem. Guy doesn't think about facility until he's attached to a girl. Or attached to the concept. Then only he thinks about it. Girls are already thinking about it since they're three. By the time they're eight, they're already working out the color scheme and the curtains. You know, they know what their wedding dress is going to look like. You know, I said, the guys don't, and once they become attached, then they start thinking. And that's only because the girl, you know, becomes annoyed because he's not. Right? So, do we understand? That's what it's being describing here, is because we're attracted by it, so then, therefore, to maintain this point of attraction, therefore, I have to have these other points of attraction. You know, it's this weird phenomenon. Somehow or another, girls like houses. They like security. They like money. They like all these different things. Weird, no? Yeah. So that's going because of disposition, right? Because we're attracted to material energy, then only we think about it. Well, we start from the pious position is that you have duties, therefore what's required to perform those duties? It's very different. Therefore, for the devotee, this principle of giving up attachment to the material is actually easier. Because the reason they have facility, the reason they're doing things is because that's the duty. Then it's just making the switch from doing the duty because of benefit I will get to that it benefits Krishna. Right? Therefore, the recommendation of the Vedic system, because it's perfectly meant for self-realization. While this other padati that, you know, the forest of material enjoyment gave, we're talking about, we're going back probably millions of years here for this discussion. So this is not old. We see the lifestyle. Guy's just there, he becomes attracted to a girl, gets involved with a girl, then he starts thinking about a house, is this, is that. It's already a bit late. Right? But they work on it, you know, and then it ends in breaking up, and this, he's all described as, just not based on duties, not based on the idea of duties into self-realization. Right? It's based on lack of duties and sense gratification, and duties only come up if you require. Right? If the girl didn't require a house, there probably wouldn't be, real estate wouldn't be big. You know, it'd just be, hey, where do I set up? Hey, there's trees out here. Pick anyone you want. You know? But we're going through. So it's just a matter, the modes of nature are just taking us through. That's the non-Vedic approach. The Vedic is, of course, this will be there, but it's in the element of you're going through the duties. And then it's easy to switch from I'm doing my duties because I'm supposed to I'm serving God because I'm supposed to I'm serving God because I want to. So it's really hard to go for, I'm only doing something because of the benefit I get for sense gratification, too. I'm doing everything selflessly for the pleasure of God. There's a big gap there. That's why it's not recommended. Right? That's why this is recommended. Not that we're worried about these material arrangements of Varnashram. It's an easier tool. It's just like, do I really care? I got a knife fetish, and therefore that's why I recommend it to you when you're cutting the potatoes. Use that, that sharp one. That one's really, the new one, it's really good. You know, they say, oh, this is fanatic. You know, I like this blunt one. You know, doesn't work good. Hey, you know, gives us something to do, you know. He needs determination, all, you know, like this. Hey, stupid. Right? So it's not that we're attached to knives that it's recommended. It just makes it easier. Material life's already so difficult. Why make it more difficult? One can say, no, but the Vedic things are so difficult. Then throw in, is divorce easy? Oh, it's so nice, right? Just go along and one day you look at each other and you go, wow, this is just not working anymore. Yeah, you're right. Okay. Yeah, well, it was nice knowing you. See you later. Okay, yeah, you know. And then, that's it. You know? Or is it a little bit more complicated than that? Fighting over the different things, fighting over the kids, you know, putting the red sticker on what's yours, the yellow sticker on what's hers, and what doesn't have a sticker on it, gets burnt. You know? So, is this great? So, that's the alternative. We say the Vedic's difficult. It's only difficult a little bit every day. The other one seems nice today, and then for years is terrible. Now, that's your choice. You know, you like a little bit of oscillation, or you like this big, kind of roller coaster. You know, it's up to you. So, Jarabharat can give it up, not because he's pious. What we're saying here is not piety. Varnashram piety does not generate devotional service. Because otherwise, why is it the demigods can't do it? Why is it the great kings can't do it? They're all pious. You don't become great kings, emperors, and demigods unless you're pious. It's because of his attraction to Krishna. So his attraction means then he will choose that path which is easier. Because it's about Krishna. You want good results, pick a good path. I'm cooking for Krishna, therefore I'll pick the best ingredients, best situation. If I'm cooking for myself, it doesn't matter. Right? That's why they make, the zip-top can of beans, right? So that we don't have to worry about these things. Right? So, the whole idea is that Jarabharat, by being attracted to the Lord, he's not attracted by anything else. He knows that whatever else is attractive, the attractiveness is Krishna. It's not the item. But, because he's pious, he can work with the item quite nicely, because in working with it, the results are for Krishna. Right? He's not working with something because of his own attachment, his own need. He's working with it because that's what gets a good result. Does that make sense? Yeah. So like this, then... And liberation, what is that? Absorption in Brahman. And Brahman comes from Krishna's body. Therefore, its attractiveness is still Krishna. So it's the person who's attractive. And then he pervades his creation as Brahman and Paramatma. And that's attractive. So how attractive will be the person? Right? Okay. Any questions or comments? Yes?
Yeah,
Here's this interesting. Very interesting.
Yes, very difficult. Thank you, Maharaj. Maybe a little bit out of context, but I came to understand that Hindu people, yes, they are looking at Lord Krishna as the great illusionist.
The great who?
Illusionist.
Illusionist.
Yes, exactly. And I was just wondering how they are making up that he would be like the great illusionist. And they put it in context with the Mahabharata. And so I wanted to ask if you eventually could explain it to us.
I mean, it's the first time I've heard it used that way. I would say this is a new thing come up by some new guru who wants to set his mark. So he's come up with, you know, this illusionist theory. Because in 40 years, I've never heard of it. I never heard a Hindu bring it up. So it must be some new young punk guru, you know, trying to establish himself, you know, something new, right? He does have mystic ability and mystic power. See, what it will be based on is the idea that there's the top is Brahman, because if you have qualities here and they're giving you trouble, therefore something that doesn't give you trouble must have no qualities. So this idea, this Mayavad idea, this is actually a derivative of Buddhism, right? It's using the Vedas, but it's actually just a form of Buddhism where there's nothing. So it's an atheistic philosophy. It's not a real philosophy. Vedic philosophy, we say it's all Brahman. So there's no, the illusion is that you think it's not Brahman, but everything you see exists, but it's Brahman. That's the Vedic. Mayavad means it's all Maya. What you see doesn't exist. That's Buddhism. It's not actually Hinduism. So that's become very popular since Shankaracharya. And so then they will take it that sense nothing is existing, but there's an illusion that it does exist, so there has to be Maya. There has to be illusion. Problem is they can't explain where it's come from, because if there's only Brahman and there's no variety, how does illusion come into effect? They'll say it comes from the jiva, but then but the jiva comes into effect because it's Brahman under illusion. So it doesn't work. So then they will take it that Vishnu means you have, I think it's illusion, and you have ajnana, illusion and ignorance. They divide the same thing. So one is considered higher, one's lower. So the higher one is that is the knowledge, right? The common person is just in general illusion. They have no knowledge. But then those in higher levels, then they have knowledge, but still that knowledge is connected with illusion. But at least they're now aware that they're an illusion, you know, aware that they don't exist, right? Yeah. So then it's just a matter of, in their mind, practice before you become non-existent, right? So, unfortunately, then here, out of respect, they do place Vishnu as the highest position within this. Like that. Though some will argue that Shiva, but they'll put Vishnu as the supreme there. But they say anything with form is temporary. So then in that way, he's the best illusionist. But there's probably a good chance whoever came up with the philosophy, they're not explaining this. Right? Yeah. It just sounds good. It's different. No one's heard it before, right? It means I've never heard it before. So it's just a... Okay, thank you. Something else? No? Yes.
We are supposed to live our life and see Krishna everywhere, in everything what we are doing, every activity, actions, reactions, and like that. But I catch myself forgetting this all the time. If I'm lucky, I find out that I'm forgetting it, but many times I even doesn't find out. What is causing this forgetfulness? Even we are willing to not be forgetful, but...
What causes the forgetfulness of Krishna?
Yeah, that's the Well,
I would say we go back. You have a hint at it in that. I mean, of course, the basis is that we have this idea that I will be happier by controlling the energy myself, rather than work with the energy under someone else's direction. I will work with the energy for my own benefit. That's basically how we get here. We just see facility and we see what we can get from it rather than Krishna. So that's the ultimate benefit. Now in this, then, one of the key elements is that there's the ideas that you're mentioning that we should remember Krishna, we should do devotional service. So what is it that actually distracts you from what you should do? You understand? It's what you want to do. Right? So what you want, that's your need. So what you should do isn't a need. So whatever's not a need, you don't work for. So when devotional service becomes a need, then it will be more stable what you work for. As long as it's something I should do, then it's what I should do, but I want to do something else. But when devotional service is what you want to do, then you'll do it regularly. Understand? So it's just a matter of more contemplation and association and practice, and then by purification it will switch. Right? We remember the other things because of the benefit we've in the past felt we got from it, or at least thought we could get from it. But we have to contemplate, therefore, the benefit we'll get from devotional service, because we say that's so hard, but it's worth thinking of making all kinds of plans how we're going to develop and get benefit within the material world. You know, we generally call that being practical. But it's not there, it's pure theory. But it's based on, you know, people's practice of it that we've seen at work. So we can say, no, it's real. But when the person's sitting there, yeah, well, if I could get the investment and then I could do that, approach these people and they could do that and then partner up with here, then make these contacts, then I could make this much money and events like this. He goes on and makes all kinds, he does this for weeks, months. Right? So is any of it there? Does he have the money? Does he have everything? What's it based on? It's based on the concept that there are other people who have done this and become successful. And then we'll call this practical. But devotional service, if it's about, we could do these things, I could chant and that, and I have example of great personalities, like here, Maharaj Yuhugana, who has been able to do all this, and then who, here, the Bharat Maharaj, what he's been able to do. Prahlad Maharaj is a kid, Dhruva Maharaj is a kid. Right? Dhruva Maharaj started when he was 5, he was a bit of a late bloomer. Prahlad Maharaj from 3 was rolling on the ground in ecstasy chanting the Lord's names. He started a touch earlier. Right? You know, so you have these elements of great, but that's theory, and then I do this other stuff and that's practical. Why? Because what I need, that's practical. And what I should do or what I, you know, would be nice, that's theory. But otherwise it's exactly the same mental speculative process. But one has its basis in Krishna consciousness and one has its basis only in material benefit. Process is the same. We're not saying change the process. The brain doesn't work differently when you become a devotee. It just works for Krishna's benefit rather than ours. Does that make sense? So you just have to be convinced that this is what you want to do. Right? That's why I think it was Shatadanya. He walked into the room one day, probably just looked at him and said, "Are you convinced?" You know? So now you go, well, yeah, you know, catches you off guard a bit. Yeah, you know, but yeah. Yeah. You had something or no? Okay. Is that okay? Yeah, okay. Something else? Yes.
Thank you, Maharaj, for the class. What will be the next after accepting that any attraction in our attachment is Krishna? What we should do after recognizing that, okay, I attractive and this attractiveness is Krishna?
Means what we're attracted to materially, when we understand that what we're attracted to materially is actually Krishna, then what do we do? Is that's the question? Okay. So then you are going to engage that item now in Krishna's service rather than in our service. It's not that you don't engage the item. It's now you engage it to serve Krishna. Right? Does that make sense? So then you naturally, because it's for Krishna, you may make any adjustments necessary, right? So before, you know, the attraction meant that I was going, you know, 200 down the highway and getting some speeding tickets. And now, because I'm doing it for Krishna, then I might, you know, only do 160 and not get tickets. You know what I'm saying? So it's just that you use it for Krishna. Then if you see that there's no value in using it for Krishna, then you may not use it. But generally, as long as that initial attraction is there, then you have to think it's Krishna. Then that's as long as you should use it. As long when you just start seeing it directly as the you know, the elements of it are Krishna, because you have a nature, you'll notice certain things of the creation. So therefore, those things then, if they're important in your service or in your duties, then they're maintained whether you have any material attraction to them or not. But if it is a matter of it's not specifically your duty and you don't have the material attraction, there's no need to actually continue using them. Right? So that's what we mean. There's no need to change the lifestyle. If you know what you're doing, it'll automatically adjust as is required. Does that make sense? Yeah. Anything else? Yes. I think there's a switch at the bottom side, something.
I have a problem with the idea of the culture of Vedic culture. It was presented to me the other day that it's not cultural for a woman to speak in front of a group. It's cultural for her to dance in front of a group, or, you know, serve in a school in front of a group. But it's not cultural for her to give class to men. I wonder if you could clarify that.
Okay. It's just like now, if the ladies, did we hear it? No, you're saying that you had a problem with, you know, at least bringing up this aspect of the Vedic culture about women speaking in front of men. Well, let's say they can speak in a classroom or some other environments. So now, if the lady's a teacher, she's in the classroom, and she's teaching students. And whose students are they? Her students, that's the key. Here, they're not her students. There's no possession. So there's no closeness, there's no leverage. Huh?
That doesn't make any sense to me.
That's because it's cultural.
Well, I'm the first person to admit I have no culture.
Okay.
But I don't understand why a woman
can't. No, because those are her students,
man,
so therefore there's emotional control over them. There's emotion. It's not a matter of speaking. Women do more speaking than men. It's a matter of the environment in which you have the emotional control. Those are the environments where the woman takes the lead. And in environments where women, where you don't have emotional control, that's where the men take the lead.
But if a woman is speaking Bhagavad Gita or Bhagavatam, how is that, undesirable, whereas a woman dances in front of men, and
no,
we
no,
consider
no, but,
that cultural?
But the thing is you're bringing it down to the man-woman element, so you must admit there's a difference in the way they think and everything. You must sit around with other men and discuss about how women are different.
Of course there's a difference.
Okay,
no question.
So now what you have to know is that the Vedic culture knows fully the difference. We, as Westerners, don't know. We just don't know. We just know they're different.
But you're not explaining it. You're just saying it's cultural.
No, I can explain it, but then you have to not talk while I'm talking. you know, that's, it's also a standard method of exchange here. So now, this the element is just like this. We'll give some examples to try to get to it. Let us say we use the Western method, the boy and girl getting together. Okay, they interact, this and that. The boy finds it's great. Now, when he commits to be married or gets married, he notices the mood changes in the girl. What's the difference? If the difference is simply the element of possession. She didn't possess before, so she only presents that much of the personality that men will find attractive. As soon as you there's possession, then she can present what she her full self, which she feels if someone's committed, they'll be able to appreciate. Though it's not necessarily appreciated, therefore the Western 75% divorce. But in that environment of possession, then you have control. That's how she controls, is through the possession. Well, the man works more on mechanics. It's a, here's a class, here's a versus, this is what you're supposed to do. Well, the woman works on the principle of possession. So therefore, you have to find, since the point of being made is about discussing, you know, Gita, as you said, is important, therefore you have to find forums in which she can do that and people specifically want to hear from her. Therefore, you see the examples of Janava Devi. She speaks in her house, and who wants to come, comes there. But when it comes to the public lectures, that was Srinivasacharya. So therefore, senior men do go and hear from these great ladies, but it's because they're going and hearing from her. They're being her student. That's how it works. When it's generic and it's impersonal, women don't flourish. But when they have that, so therefore, let's say one Mataji is there and she's taking out a parikram, then people are there because they want to be. There's a personal relationship. So it has strength, it has meaning. You know, they want to run a class. Who's stopping anybody from running classes? Right? Russians are running a class, this one's running a class. No. You run class. You want to speak, you speak. Is it about speaking Gita or is it about a social issue? Personally, I would say from the evidence is from personal issue, because otherwise the forms to speak are unlimited. But you have to know which one you work in. Just like when the man is out in the field, he's at work, he feels he's in control. But as soon as he walks in the front door of his house, his wife's in control. Why? It's a different environment. It's like the elephant is strong on land, weak in water. The crocodile is strong in the water, weak on land. It's just the way it is. So knowing this, then you create the environments in which women can do this. Right? So therefore, you can create them, but you have to be intelligent. You have to, it's just like someone who's good at cooking can create preparations because they know how to combine things. They know the nature of all the elements. So if you know the feminine nature, you can create the environments and it'll be wonderful. So that's what we're talking about. We're not saying that they shouldn't be giving and this and that. You just have to know the context of what you're dealing with. Women are women and men are men, and they're very different. It means the man, he has disciples, the disciples go away. It's not nice, but you know, it's a formal element. If a woman has disciples, they go away, she'll take it personally. She'll be devastated. Now, and of those disciples that go away, a lot of them speak bad about you. The man is just, they got tough skin. The women, it'll completely destroy them. These are elements of reality.
Can I comment?
Please.
Okay, I don't think the women would be devastated if they lose a disciple. They, you know, they're willing to divorce a husband or they see their children go away and so
forth. Yeah, but can her friend date her old husband?
Well, can his friend...
No.
Can his friend date his old wife? You know,
he doesn't mind as much.
Oh, I don't know about that. I doubt that.
You understand? So therefore, now why is that said? Prabhupada says when you put man and woman together, they're married. The rest of their life, they have a connection, even though they're divorced. So well, it's a Vedic principle.
Well, getting back to, you know, giving Bhagavatam class, you know, okay, you basically said that it's all right for women to give class if men want to attend, if men want to put themselves
yes.
in a submissive position to hear the Bhagavatam from a female.
Right.
Right, so that's okay.
It's fine, but it's the thing
not,
is,
it's
is
not a, it's not a Vedic culture.
Don't spin this. We're talking here. We're talking Shastra, not diplomacy.
I'm just asking. It's not a Vedic culture. It's not against Vedic culture.
No. What's against Vedic culture is, let's say, this public forum sitting here. The men are right here, right in your face. When Jonathan Davy speaks, this is all women. The men are in the back. In fact, there's a curtain there.
We can arrange that. That can be arranged.
If you can arrange it like that, fine. What we're talking about is culture. What we're saying is basing it on these things, saying we're not the body, and it's totally about the body. These are pranamoyic approaches. They're not philosophical, they're not cultural, they're not religion, they're a total misunderstanding of actually the nature of God's creation. You have to know how to do it.
So why did Prabhupada allow women to speak in front of large groups, even in front of his sannyasis?
See, you have now, these are our people. But at the same time, as you don't have that relationship, the other ones are completely, you don't know them. And what were they speaking? Were they speaking as the main speaker? Were they speaking as the main speaker?
They spoke over the heads of sannyasis.
Yes, but Prabhupada was sitting there.
That's all right.
Yeah, but it's what was, and why did Prabhupada say he did that? What did he tell Damodar Maharaj?
I don't know.
He told him that our women can say this. Now, so what can our sannyasis speak? He was pointing, that's why when that big pundit was there and he said, who's God? And he said, oh, well, that's a very difficult question. He called over an 8-year-old boy. Who's God? And he said, Krishna. He said, even he knows. So you have to know the techniques that are being used. It's a matter of, in a Pandal program, when you're doing that, then you have your lead speaker and everybody else speaks beforehand. So you would notice the women who speak, then after that, then you'd have senior men, then sannyasis, then Prabhupada. So they were following a hierarchy. So...
That's all right.
Yeah. We don't have problems with that. But the point is they weren't giving... Basically, here is probably showing that even the living entity who can, in normal society, because who's sitting in front of them, the ladies there sitting in front of them, they're there because of religious elements. It's pious, it's nice. But here, these women were speaking spiritual. So he's showing that women can go beyond, even despite the position. That's why the Shastra says these things. Right? It points it out there. But the point is even though we may say the women, the Shudra, the friends of the twice born, that these they tend to get distracted very easily. But worse than that is the man who's attached to them. Because distraction is one thing, getting distracted by, you know, by the what creates distraction, then that's worse. So there's always a balance in the Vedic. Whatever's the weakness in one, it's the strength. You know, they have a strength that's the opposite. And it's just like, for men, Prithu Maharaj says, men have to learn sense control and sensitivity. Women always control the senses. It's never about doing so. It has to get a particular result. So they can not eat or not do something when men would just, hey, let's just go ahead and eat. A woman is upset, she doesn't eat. Right? And being sensitive, she's always sensitive. Right? Now, women, then it's a matter of chastity and being satisfied. You know, men tend to be a little focused and then, get into something and, you know, they got it, it's good enough. You know, I got the diner, I got my seat in the diner, I got my cup of coffee, I got my donut, and he's been doing it for 20 years. One could do that for 3 days. Probably she wouldn't even walk into that diner, so, you know, it might even be less. So, you have the elements of just knowing where each one's strength is and where it is in the men, that's where it's weak in the women. And where it's weak in the men, that's where it's strong in the woman. Right? Because, like, let's say the man gets attracted by sense gratification, his brain stops working. He only works on the sensual platform. But for the women, the sensual, the emotional, and the intellectual always work simultaneously. So it's the woman who will say, this is not good. She'll come up with the first thing that maybe we should break this off. You know, so that's the thing, is each has their strength, each has their weaknesses, so you have to play to those and create the environments in which it can be done. It's not a problem to do it, It's a problem of, if we do it based on the modern principles of social standards, then that for us is useless. But if we're basing it on, you know, actual the Krishna conscious principles with the culture, then it's fine. Like that. So it's just a matter of thinking it out more to make it actually realizable. That's the thing. So does that make sense?
That's good. Thank you. I just want to make sure it wasn't a Vedic. I had the impression that the person that was speaking to me said that it was not cultural.
It's not cultural by the presentation that's being made by the modernistic feministic movement, because it's just a modernistic movement. It's not based on actually the soul or on all these things. It's based totally on that they're their body. So that's just pranamoy. And those kind of things have been there forever. The Amazons, how many thousands of years old are the Amazons? You know, so it's always been there. These kind of things, you've always had this kind of nature. It's not new. It's brought out as that it's the new enlightened thing. No, they've always been there. So that kind of attitude is not what we're interested in, is because then it is about them and their body and their needs, and it's not about what is duty. Because the point is what is duty? Okay, what's the woman's duty? You have the Krishna conscious element, but you have a conditioning through which you have to express it. Right? Just like the man, he wants to be married, so he has duties that go with it. So he expresses his Krishna consciousness through the marriage ashram.
Well, don't the women also have a duty to preach?
Yes, but then you have to have the place where they will do well preaching, where there is a sense of control.
So they only should preach to women? Is that what you're saying?
No, you have to preach to environments where you have control. But you have to know it's emotional control. Just like this, you want to have a good fun here? Okay, go back. What were some of the complaints about the Dzongla Acharyas back in the 80s? You know, since you like this area. Okay, was there an element that there was the sense of that these are my disciples, I can do with them as I want? Right? Yeah.
There were hundreds of problems.
No, but these are the bigger ones, right? And about that if they said something, then it's authority. And then the disciples saying, they're the pure devotees, everyone else is a schmuck, you know, like that. Okay? Now, if a woman's there, just that same principle would be there, increase it by 10. You tell those big guys, you know, one-on-one, they don't care. You get a whole room of, you get the GBC there and sit them down and tell them, then they go, okay. But now the thing is how is that going to work with a woman? She's, if in a group, she has to be the center of attention. She has to be the consideration. How are you going to tell her? Right? Where's your emotional commitment? Where is you going to take care? So why should she listen? The disciples are going to say, she spoke this. And then now if you say, no, but she's doing wrong. Oh, this is a feminist thing. One's getting into serious danger here. Because of the cultural elements. Like that. Now the Shastra does say if they're liberated, then they can do this.
Comment?
Yes, please.
Oh, considering what the, you know, the women in our society have undergone or taken up or, you know, dealt with and tolerated for so many years, it would seem that they're not on a very strong feminist platform. They're basically just humble devotees trying to assert their right to preach.
No, but
that's my concern.
Yes, yes, yes. But the point is it's still one social wrong isn't corrected by another social wrong. If the men behave badly, it's not by the women behaving badly that it makes it all right. Just like, let's say, give an example. In Belgium, then generally it's like the men stand on the deities right and the women on the deities left, because that's how the energies work, right? Radharani's on the left and the women are, it's just standard in all the temples in India. But the door was on the men's side, so the women had a little problem getting through to the other side, but they could get through. But sometimes, you know, it was a little difficult. So then they, for this festival, switched it. And then one lady was leading the kirtan, the ladies were all fired up, now they're on that side. It was impossible to get a past because they're the women. Why are you coming in here? The men, oh, you're trying to get through because you're a man. See, if you work it on this man-woman principle, on the mundane, this element of, then the women are always better at it. There's no sense of equality here. It's a matter of the women already have 90%. They want half of the 10% that's left. There's no question that we're dealing with 50-50 here. They don't work on 50-50. It has to be majority.
Shall I go on?
Yeah, I mean, it's like what's the split in LA? It's 70-30. Other places, they work it out at 50-50. But in LA, where the women have a stronger say, it's 70-30.
I thought Suvas really kept them under his...
No. I'm not talking about LA meaning the temple. I'm talking about California.
Oh, California. We're not talking about California. We're talking about ISKCON.
I'm talking about... Yeah, so am I. Krishna West? Give me a break.
I don't know about that argument. I've heard a little bit about that argument. But
yeah,
I don't know,
but I'm just saying, give me a break. You know, why is it always American? Why not European? Why not European? You know, so I've seen that. I was at the farm once in Hungary. And, you know, because coming regularly, I noticed this one guy, there was a couple. And I noticed this one guy, he was there for like 2 weeks. I said, how is this working? He says, no, my wife was out, she takes care of everything home, I come for 2 weeks. And then the next special, she comes for 2 weeks and I do. They can do these things, some Americans can't. They have trouble, it's just accepted, like in China, it's like, you know, martial art, it doesn't matter if you're a man or a woman. But how they move and all that, there's masculine and feminine elements. You know, you go into the Chinese house, whoever comes home first cooks dinner. So if the husband was later at work, then the wife got home first, she cooks dinner. If you know, he came home first, he cooks dinner. They don't make these kind of distinctions. We make these distinctions. They could wear the same clothes, everything. But the acceptance that there's a difference in the mentality of men and women is very strong, very clear. So that's the difference, is that we're trying to create equality by not recognizing the difference. It's unscientific, it will never work. It can't be done. You have to recognize the difference, you have to recognize the natures, then you apply it, then you can get what you're looking for. All I'm saying is you have to go about the solution from the platform of Anandamayi. You can't use it as a tool to establish Pranamayi. That's my point. Because Pranamayi is political. Manamayi is religious principles. Vijnanamayi is actually the nature of the soul. Anandamayi means it pleases Krishna. So you have to use, and with each one comes its culture. So what I'm saying is you have to use the culture of that highest culture and then apply it. Because we see in the Lord's pastimes, how do the women position themselves? I'll give you another story. Gargi, who's one of the ones that's quoted as, you know, she was liberated, and in the Vedanta Sutra, then Baladevi Dibhushan, when he's talking about an Ekayana Bhakta or an Uttam Bhakta, he quotes her. Now, she was at a program by Janaka Muni, or Janaka Rishi, means the king. And, you know, you have a yajna, and so you have sages, and they're all talking. So now, it came up as, well, who knows the Shastras the best? Who knows everything? You know, that who can answer all questions? So then with some time, very quickly, it became obvious that Vishwamitra was, you know, stronger. Anybody would stand up and bring in any Shastra, any technical point, he knew it. This yajna and this thing, what spoon, and then this, and how big, anything. He could deal with it. And everybody was impressed. Then when no one had any questions, right, then the king said, well, is there no one else? So is he he's the man? Is no one else going to step forward and establish, you know, so is he the man? Then Gargi said, I have a question. So then she stood up. And then in standing up, then she asked him about spiritual subject matter, which he didn't know anything about. And he started to become very disturbed, very upset. And as soon as she saw he was getting upset, She merely announced to the crowd that Vishwamitra is the greatest scholar here. Even though technically she was. But as far as the social, then it's there. So there are social, it's just how it works. The woman's right when she's telling the man he's an idiot, but he really doesn't appreciate it. Really just doesn't appreciate it. But it's true. You know, so therefore, what do you want? Well, can't you say it nicely? Can't you say that? You're a woman. Can't you do it? So everybody's looking for women to be women and men to be men. Men haven't been men, therefore the women are grumbling. So if you want to solve the problem, you have to get men to become men and then make arrangements that women can be women. And then everybody can do all that connected to Krishna.
So that pretty much proves my point, that Gargi was able to speak in front of the assembly.
Yes, but when did she speak? Did she speak first or last? She only spoke when no one else wanted to speak.
Well, that's all right.
But this is what I'm talking about. This is culture.
Well, the culture should be, though, there should be an allowance, as you said, for...
No, the culture should be culture. It's not a matter of a rule. It's there, but because as soon as you do this, oh, it's okay, but the culture will be left. Why? Because we're coming from a place that has no culture. Right? What culture is there in America except for European? And that's old school, and that's based on religion. Good Christian, you know, agreed Christian, that's all that there is in America of culture. There isn't anything else. They can't claim anything else, unless you want to claim the cowboys or something, you know, like that. But that's you know, that's down home, that's local, you know, like that. Even the what are the guys on the stilts, you know, the Creoles and all those, you know, in the bayou. Even that has that French element. Their cooking is French and African. You know, it's not really American. So there's not a lot there. So whatever is there is coming from the old world. And so then, if we don't go back, and that's, as we said, coming from religion. So culture comes from religion. So we can't say, oh, the Shastra this, or that's not this or that, or doubt the Shastra, doubt Prabhupada, and then come up with a solution. It won't work. Solutions come because Krishna's kind and gives them to you. You can't work it out with your own brains, with our own management, with our own money. It has to be Krishna's revelation. So only if you're trying to please him by doing it how he likes it done, then he'll show wonderful ways to get it done. So,
Thank you.
Okay. No, it's late. You want to say something? He was talking about, because it came up, why are the ladies talking at the Pandal, and he's saying that they that shows that our women know the philosophy. But that being said, they didn't give class in the temples. They didn't stand next to Prabhupada and wave the chamar.
They did give class in the temples.
They regularly did. I never saw it here. I've been here 40 years.
In Europe, they did. Well, not here. Here's...
That's there. Europe's a different thing. So therefore, then if we're going to do the Western things, do them in the West. And do the Indian things here. So when people come here, wear a dhoti. When you go to West, wear your chinos.
How do you explain that the current culture, there was a prime minister here as a woman that probably had to go and speak?
That's another thing. Those aren't Indians. Those aren't Indians. Those aren't Indians. Those are Brits. They're not Indians.
So the Bengalis are Vedic and the people in Calcutta are not Vedic.
No, what Prabhupada and the Acharyas give, that's Vedic. We have to know where to look for it. You know, that's the point of swanning. You have to know where to look and take that and leave the rest. So you have to be educated in it, then you can see it. You know, like that. So that's why Prabhupada put so much emphasis on education. We put so much emphasis on money and management. It should be on education. Then the leadership will know how to run things. It's very, very simple. Because it's not just because you're in the position that gives you the authority. It has to come down through the parampara that you're speaking on what the Shastra says. You know, it is a GBC rule that a GBC man is supposed to be, I think it'd be a Bhaktivedanta. They have the degree. I was there in the meeting when they established that. Sannyasis, supposed to be Bhakti Vaibhav. Any second initiated devotee is supposed to be Bhakti Shastri. You know, so gurus and the GBC are supposed to be Bhaktivedantas. But education, except for Satsarup and Burijan, who really saw that education was important? Who really worked to establish it? You know, otherwise, Prabhupada said every temple is supposed to be a center of education. You know, it's the last thing. It's a center of collection, it's a center of all kinds of things, but not education. A few, but it's individual, it's not universal. So that's the point. The cultural elements, the educational elements, these aren't, we don't, it's not that devotees are neglecting them on purpose, they don't know they're there to follow. That's the point. So they're engaging their nature in Krishna service, but if they were more educated, they could engage more. They could do more like that. That's the thing. They could do so much more. Because then, if we see, in those early, there's one letter where Prabhupada's talking about management. And the first thing he's talking about, besides being everything has to be done for Krishna, the next thing is that they have to be able to understand someone's nature according to Varnashram. Otherwise, how do you engage them? It's immediate next points. And then he goes on to elaborate on that. So these things are, these points are, get missed. So it's just a matter of, okay, the temple's doing this service, everybody's got to do that, rather than, okay, we have a temple, we could do so many things, we have persons to do these, let's do those things. Okay, I had that 5 years now from I was going to, let's say, open a restaurant, but I got a guy who's a professional chef, just joined. Why not open a restaurant now? They don't do those things. Right? So then they go away. And then they have this huge community, and now after 30 years we decide, okay, maybe we should listen to the community since no one else is joining. You know, like that. So the whole idea is you can avoid all these things if one has the knowledge of the culture and how it works. Then you would see, yes, that so many things have to be addressed. Then people can be as happy as it gets here, right? You know, you can never really be happy here, but you can get a little bit more happy. So, okay. So, okay. I guess we should stop now, otherwise we're well over the time. We always have a good discussion here. Okay. Jai Gantara Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivedanta ki, Jainatai Gaura Premanandi.